Hey, this is Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to the Christmas Eve edition of The Next Step. This is a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, about looking at the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. In fact, we're going to even manage to get Christmas into the whole mix, too. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the Initiates mission and is brought to you by the good folks at Apostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. I know you're ready. I am ready too. I mean, we all wait for this, right? We wait for Christmas. What a beautiful time of year. We have had some incredible rainfall in Southern California. Incredible in the sense that it doesn't happen over here, you know? God didn't make green apples and it don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime. Well, we don't get rain anytime in Southern California. Except it happened like this last week. Wow! Wow, torrential rain pours. But it all cleared up, and today we're looking at beautiful sunny skies over here, getting ready for Christmas. And Christmas, wherever you may be, I know is a magical time of year. We're looking forward to it, and today we're going to be talking about that. Did I do that right? Was that right? Is today the Christmas Eve, right? How about the Eve of Christmas Eve? Yeah, there you go. Plain and simple. Very easy. We're going to be focusing in on the eve of Christmas Eve. In fact, about Christmas as well. We've got a great podcast for you. We dissected Christmas last week, didn't we? We went through all the astrological forecasts, including its connection to the winter solstice. By the way, I don't know how many of you got a chance to see the lunar eclipse, but they at least the pictures that I saw that were great. Of course, we missed it. As I said, we were under clouds for the last week, and it was, you know what, there was something really, I don't know, romantic about that night. Something very unusually romantical happened because it was the winter solstice, and I was, you know, it's like one of my celebrations, and I was getting out there, and I was looking forward to seeing the eclipse. 317 years since the eclipse had happened in at the farthest point that the moon was away from the earth. Just, there was all kinds of details to this one, and I was looking forward to it, and of course we were under the clouds. Oh, okay, tough luck. We get to watch it on the internet at least. But around 1 in the morning, which was the end of the eclipse, I said, let me give it one more chance. And I went out there in the rain and looked up and, of course, saw nothing. But what was unusual is I walked back in and I had the TV on and they were playing clips of a show that was on that night. That night there was a show called Sing Out. And there was Neil Diamond singing Ain't No Sunshine. I thought to myself, okay, I got eclipsed for the eclipse by the clouds. Now this guy's telling us that there's no sunshine. I didn't even get any moonshine. And then when I thought about moonshine, I thought of, well, these metaphors go on, right? Isn't that like some kind of ingredient you put in the eggnog? And so somehow you can like explore this in so many dimensions that I got dizzy and I said, okay, I'm going to sleep this winter solstice. not to be revisited for another year. But you know what? I love this connection between the Christmas feast and the solstice. Primarily because it allows us to see really that, you know, once the church got structured, we started doing things for reasons, let's say, other than religious or spiritual reasons. And placing the birth of Jesus, the celebration of Jesus' birth on December 25th, as much as there may have been some kind of religious reason for it, it also had a lot of political, socioeconomic reasons for it. And we don't want to admit this, but this is it. You know, I mean, we talked about this quite a bit last week. You know, there was a bunch of pagans that were feasting around the celebration of the sun, S-U-N, sun. And it was important for them to change that feast into the celebration of the sun, S-O-N, sun. And so December 25th was adopted in the West. And, you know, it's not to say that the Armenian date of January 6th is there's anything special about that as well. And obviously in the early centuries, once after the birth of Christ was celebrated, and you got to remember this all the time, that in the beginning, when the church first got established, Jesus' birth was not remembered, was not celebrated. I mean, the main focus was his resurrection. Millions of people, everybody that we know, was born, okay? The birthdays were not the celebration, but no one had conquered death. And so the first gospel or good news was not that Jesus was born, but that Jesus had resurrected. And so the Easter message becomes the first gospel or the good news. And later on, as the church developed, they decided that it was necessary to celebrate these different feasts, including Jesus' birth, the nativity, his baptism. And January 6th was the original date. And then later on, Constantine decided to change it to December 25th because of the Feast of Saturnalia happening in the Roman Empire. Anyway, I went into it in some detail last week. Today what I want to do is talk about really the essence of what that Christmas message is all about. Because we talk about the stars in the sky flashing. We talk about the wise men coming and visiting. No room at the inn. And you know, that's one of those really, really impressive kind of moments in Hollywood, I think. And I think we all have that picture. If you read the Gospel of Luke, it said Jesus was born in a manger because there was no room for him in the inn. That's all it says. It's one verse. That's all it says. But I think we have this picture of, you know, Joseph and Mary. Mary in labor. She's full term. She's at 9 months and she's walking into Bethlehem and wants to deliver, looking for a place to deliver. Hospitals, of course, are non-existent in this little area. And so a clean little room at the inn would be really nice. They go and they knock on the door, and inside they're pubbing, they're drinking, they're doing all kinds of stuff. And the innkeeper says, "I'm sorry, no room for you in the inn. But back there's a small barn, and you could find the manger over there." And so poor Joseph and poor Mary going, you know, this is a beautiful story. It's really, really nice. But of course, that's what Hollywood does to these stories, right? They give us all of the images that, in a sense, are not lacking in the Gospels, but in the Gospels, it wasn't a central point. I mean, it was suffice it to say that there was no room at the inn. And we turn that into a metaphor for us as Christians to say that this Christmas Eve, Jesus comes into our lives, into our Bethlehems, into our hearts. And do we put a sign that says no vacancy out? Is there room in our inns for Jesus Christ? Now that's the eternal question that has been asked since the first Bethlehem story. And that's where we as Christians need to take the reins to understand Christmas as not just a celebration of saying, all right, yeah, Jesus was born, but that birth has a meaning, that God so loved us, that he cared about us so much, that in his infinite love for humankind, for his creation, he did not abandon us, but instead he delivered us with the very best gift, with the gift of eternal life, sharing in that complete universe that he had created from the beginning of time, sharing in that time, in that universe, in that eternity with our Creator. And that's a gift that's given to each of us. And the means to that gift is his incarnation through Christ. Christ the Anointed One. Christ who comes and says, love one another. This is the one simple message that I have to you. By this they will know that you are my children. And so love is incarnate. John the Evangelist tells us that God is love. Love is incarnate. God is incarnate. He takes on human flesh. And he lives within us. as an example of humility, as an example of service, as a model of how to love and care for others, and above all, how to sacrifice for people that you love. But today we're going to also look at Christmas through the lens of Armodoxy. In other words, what does Christianity mean today? What does it mean that Jesus is born today in a world that's plagued with famine, with war, with genocide? I mean, what does it mean that we're sitting out there on the coast of Korea with bombers and saying Merry Christmas to one another here in the States? How do you reconcile this issue of placing this beautiful slogan on each of our Christmas cards, peace on earth, goodwill to men, with the idea that we're ready to really take out just anybody who messes with us? We're going to be looking at that today. That's part of the discussion of this Christmas Eve. Before we go on, I want to also tell you, Ani's here with her bubbles, of course. We're going to be, well, you're going to get all the stuff that you're accustomed to get with a podcast called The Next Step. But right now, we kick it off with the song of the day. How about something a little different? Are you running around? Are you just tired because you've been, like, really stressed getting gifts here and there? Here is a song to settle us down. It is from an ancient composer, certainly before my time, from Johann Sebastian Bach. This is the Christmas song I've picked out for you today. Jesu, joy of man's desiring. Oh, did that calm me down? Calm me down. Oh, I needed that. That, of course, Bach's Yesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. That's from an artist, Angel Romero, off of his Angel Romero's plays, the works of Johann Sebastian Bach. And that is available just about everywhere good music is available. Want to check that out? We'll put a link on our website. But you know what? It's just been a really crazy Christmas season, in the sense that I felt good, I felt vibrant, crazy in the sense that, yeah, we were running around. Even if you weren't involved in the hustle and bustle, there were just people all around you. And I felt like this year, people were a little bit more in tune with the Christmas message. In other words, they weren't shying away from turning to you and saying, Merry Christmas, my friend, you know? It was very nice.
Merry Christmas, my friend!
Yes, exactly. I don't know where you find these things from. But exactly, people were more inclined to say Merry Christmas. It was exciting. It is exciting. And, you know, this year was kind of different. I mean, I didn't hear Kwanzaa at all. Hanukkah a little bit. But, you know, December 25th is Christmas. Like it or not, that's Christmas. That's the day that you're celebrating. And the word Christmas means Christ Mass. A Mass, it's exactly the same word in Armenian Orthodoxy. Armenian word mas means a portion of Christ. Which portion? The birth, the nativity. And, you know, before I go off too much from the song of the day, the reason I selected, and I know people have a difficulty with this when they first tune into the next step. They say, okay, we're listening to a show about Armenian Orthodoxy. Why aren't you playing the hymns of the Armenian Church? And certainly we do. But when I play a song like Bach, I mean, don't exclude people like this from Armenian Orthodoxy. I mean, Bach was in tune with the universe. He was in tune with God. His creations were a celebration of God's gift. His creations, his inventions, whether on the organ, whether he took a piano, a harpsichord, and he put these this musical notation together, was in praise of God. And this is basically what the Armenian Orthodox faith has said from day one. It is not confined to an ethnic group of people. It is the universal faith. That the orchestration of the universe, when it all began, there was a rhyme and reason to it. It has melody to it. It has high points, low points. It has ease to it. It has tremendous volume sometimes, and sometimes it just whispers at us. But in all things, it talks to us. And certainly a piece like this, Bach's Yesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, speaks to us at different levels. And so, in many senses, it is Armenian Orthodoxy today. It speaks to us, even though created 300-400 years ago, it speaks to us today, doesn't it? And the words, listen to this. Yesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, Holy Wisdom, Love Most Bright, drawn by thee, our souls aspiring, soar to the uncreated light. Word of God, our flesh that fashioned, with the fire of life impassioned, striving still to truth unknown, soaring, dying round thy throne. Through the way where hope is guiding, hark what peaceful music rings, where the flock in thee confiding. Drink of joy from the deathless springs. Theirs is beauty's fairest pleasure. Theirs is wisdom's holiest treasure. Thou dost ever lead thine own in the love of joys unknown. Listen how poetic that is. How powerful that is. Do you get it now? It's all connected. Whether it's Johann Sebastian Bach, Ludwig van Beethoven, Gomidas, whether it's Nerses Shenorhali, whether it's St. Gregory the Illuminator, or it comes from the beginning of time, the sound of the universe beginning, being created. It's all the same sound. It's all the same praise. It all points in one direction, to something mystery, something mysterious, something beyond our comprehension. We choose to call it God. We understand God through the incarnation of Christ. This is powerful. This is the message that Armenian Orthodoxy has thrown out from the beginning of time and has codified in the last 2,000 years since the inception of the Armenian Church. And now is being delivered to a new generation. Here it is. That's how sacred Orthodoxy has to be to us. So sacred that it appears here and there in the form of music, in the form of poetry, in the form of creation itself. And so, yes, Bach was an Orthodoxy. He was part of Armenian Orthodoxy. As was Beethoven, as was Gomidas, as was Shneur Ali, as was St. Gregory Illuminator. Now let's push it a little. Are you ready? Let's push it. Why are we talking about as was? As was Shneur Ali, as was St. Gregory. Let's talk about as is. Because you and I are part of this equation too. And this is very important to understand when we talk about Orthodoxy. Many times, especially on ancient things like the ancient churches, like Orthodoxy, we want to look at the saints, which is very important to, you know, to grab from them, to take from them their example, their message, but not at the exclusion of the present, of the contemporary. And you are part of the equation, as I am part of the equation of Orthodoxy today. I learned this many years ago. I'd sit through these incredible meetings where they discuss the fate of the church in terms of the youth. Where are the youth? Why aren't they coming to church? Well, you've never included them in the discussion, have you? You don't see youth sitting around those meetings. It's always these older people that are discussing the youth. And here's, like, there's a saying that they have, and I'm sure you've heard this not only in church circles, but in other churches, in other circles, excuse me. They'll say that the youth are the future of the church. The future of the college, the future of our organization, whatever it may be, you can apply the organization to it. But the youth are the future. Well, do you understand when you say something like that, what you're doing? You're discounting them today. In other words, there's something that they are somebody or some people, some group that has come, that will come to its own at some point in the future, but today they're basically nothing. They don't exist. What do you mean the youth are the future? The youth are today. They're living today. They have something to say. They are part of that equation. It's like I remember once we were involved with this small little group, and we were up in the mountains, and there were a few Buddhists in our group, and they went ahead and did this meditation, and we were listening to the different sounds all around us, the different sounds that were coming from the mountaintops, whether it was the birds or the rustling of the leaves and the trees. And someone in the distance yelled out. I forgot what it was, but they yelled out. And it was obviously they were having some fun. And a group of people were offended by this. Hey, we're enjoying nature. Listen to these people ruining our enjoyment. Hey, don't you get it? That human voice is also part of nature. Don't you get it that that voice is part of what you are, what you experience all around you? And so to understand the entire universe, understand God's compassion for us, you need to walk in the shoes. Yes, walk in the shoes of others and understand where they're coming from, who they are. And you realize that for God, all things, all people, all of humanity is His children. And you can't exclude them. You can't say that there is a group over there that will become the church. No, they are the church today. And so when we talk about Armenian Orthodoxy today in the terms of Orthodoxy, something that we can grasp onto, it's very important, and I always make this point, that it's not at the exclusion of today's generation. In other words, the past is there, we draw from it, we are nourished by the prayers, by the teachings of the church fathers and mothers. But we are now contributing. and we are equally valid. What we produce today is part of that entire equation. And so when I sit here and we talk about the next step, this is it. You're here. You've arrived. This is the next step in Armenian Orthodoxy, in Armadoxy, in what's happening today in the 21st century. And it requires us to be looking at it with the strength of the church, with the past, but looking at it with today's eyes. And that's what we're going to do today. Just a few minutes. I'm going to go to Ani's bubbles right now. And I think that, well, there you go. There she is. There's the harpist. Just rolling that harp into the studio. We're going to go to Ani's bubbles. We'll be back in just a little bit. And we're going to be looking at Christmas through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy.
Today's spiritual bubble is a Christmas story called Ode to Joy. The year our youngest daughter Shelley was 4, she received an unusual Christmas present from Santa. She was the perfect age for Christmas, able to understand the true meaning of the season, but still completely enchanted by the magic of it. Her innocent joyfulness was compelling and catching, a great gift to parents, reminding us of what Christmas should represent, no matter how old we are. The most highly prized gift Shelley received that Christmas Eve was a giant bubble maker. A simple device of plastic and cloth, the inventor promised it would create huge, billowing bubbles large enough to swallow a wide-eyed 4-year-old. Both Shelley and I were excited about trying it out, but it was after dark, so we'd have to wait until the next day. Later that night, I read the instruction booklet while Shelley played with some of her other new toys. The inventor of the bubble maker had tried all types of soaps to formulate bubbles and found that Joy dishwashing detergent created the best giant bubbles. I'd have to go buy some. The next morning, I was awakened very early by small stirrings in the house. Shelley was up. I knew in my sleepy mind that Christmas Day's festivities would soon begin, so I arose and made my way toward the kitchen to start the coffee. In the hallway, I met my daughter, already wide awake, bubble maker clutched in her chubby little hand, the magic of Christmas morning embraced in her 4-year-old heart. Her eyes were shining with excitement, and she asked, "Daddy, can we make bubbles now?" I sighed heavily and rubbed my eyes. I looked toward the window, where the sky was only beginning to lighten with dawn. I looked toward the kitchen, where the coffee pot had yet to start dripping its aromatic reward for Christmas morning. "Shelley," I said, my voice almost pleading and perhaps a little annoyed, "it's too early. I haven't even had my coffee yet." Her smile fell away. Immediately, I felt a father's remorse for bursting her bright Christmas bubble with what I had suddenly realized was my own selfish problem, and my heart broke a little. But I was a grown-up. I could fix this. In a flash of adult inspiration, I unshouldered the responsibility. Recalling the inventor's recommendation of a particular brand of bubble-making detergent, which I knew we did not have in the house, I laid the blame squarely on him, pointing out gently, "Besides, you have to have Joy." I watched her eyes light back up as she realized, in less than an instant, that she could neutralize this small problem with the great and wonderful truth she was about to reveal. "Oh, Daddy," she promised with all honesty and enthusiasm and all the Christmas excitement she could possibly communicate. "Oh, Daddy, I do have Joy." I broke records getting to the store, and in no time at all, we were on the front lawn creating gigantic, billowing gossamer orbs, each one filled with joy and sent forth shimmering into the Christmas sun. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Oh, thank you, Ani. That was beautiful. Merry Christmas to you. You know, Ani, you are the bubble. Ani is the bubble. She is the bubble. That is... Because she gets us to start thinking about what's important. And she always picks out such a beautiful story. Today's story, the bubble, the Christmas bubble maker. And I think Joy stock will skyrocket tomorrow, right after the Christmas holiday for sure, right? I wish we were that powerful. But let me make a pitch for Bubbles. You know, Christmas, time to give gifts. Give some bubbles to people. Give some bubbles, you know, and don't be scared to blow with them, too. It's really a neat little pastime. I love blowing bubbles, because as you watch those little bubbles go off into heaven, your mind goes with imagination of where they might end up, where they go. And it's important to imagine. And certainly when Ani comes in here and gives us her spiritual message, the spiritual bubbles, they get our minds to think about different things. Things that are in, that we're involved in, things that are happening around in our lives. So I appreciate that, and Merry Christmas to you. And they got to be leaving soon, so God be with you, and hope to see you at Christmas Eve service tomorrow night. Last night we were at the local hospital here in Glendale. You know, part of our In His Shoes experience is to walk in the shoes of others, literally to feel the pain of others and to experience what they're going through. Considering that Armenians have been through so much and people have never experienced, you know, the idea of genocide, we have, so now we have an obligation to really feel the pain of others, feel their experiences, and then be an advocate, become a voice, become the body of Christ in the lives of others who are hurting. And one of our, well, traditions, let me say, during the last several years is to take a group of people out to the local hospitals and Christmas carol, a small little gesture, singing, bringing holiday cheer. You want to believe at least it's holiday cheer. Sometimes with the voices that come to, we get together. But it's the spirit. It's the spirit in which it's done. And definitely last night was no different than any other time we'd done it in previous years. A group of people walking down the halls and singing Christmas carols to the patients really, really sparks up a lot of excitement, interest, and healing. I want to believe healing as well. But I'd like to share with you something that happened last night, and in sharing that, I want to make the segue. I want to go into our message of Christmas today, very special Christmas, through the lens of Armodoxy. You know, here in Glendale, we have a very large population of Armenians, specifically Armenian immigrants who have come here, first generation, who've come here after the war in Beirut, after the falling of the Shah in Iran, and of course after the end of communism. So you have like three waves of Armenians that have come, and of course along the way, 70s, 80s, 90s, I just described those events that took place during those years. And along the way, of course, many other people have immigrated, and you've got a very large number of Armenians, so large that many of the public facilities have signs in Armenian. And last night, going to the local Glendale Adventist Hospital, there were, of course, signs in Armenian. And in the lobby, we found some magazines, including Asparez, one of the older newspapers, Armenian daily newspapers, written in Armenian, right in the lobby. Now, what was interesting, why was Asparez there? I imagine because that particular issue, I believe it was the December 4th issue of this year, was dedicated to healthcare. And so the title on the front page of the newspaper is Arochutuna Yerchangutune. Health is happiness. That if you're healthy, obviously you're happy. And you go through the entire newspaper and it talks about different healthcare providers, interviews with different healthcare professionals, talks with doctors, with plastic surgeons, and an interview with a plastic surgeon, and so on. And of course, the accompanying advertising was in there as well for healthcare providers. Now, there is something missing from this newspaper, and I know you, if you've been following the Next Step for a while, you know what we're talking about, right? Where's the place of the church? We talk about healthcare, but just as I said a few minutes ago, Armenian Orthodoxy, we talk about it with the absence of us, of this generation. We talk about healthcare, we talk about different facets of life, with the exclusion of spirituality. And the rest of the world will tell you that how important spirituality is, how important prayer life is to the healing of an individual. I'm not just talking about healing from physical ails, especially emotional ails, emotional difficulties, but you know that prayer life, when taken as directed, okay, let's use the medical terms, when taken as directed, is an incredible healer. And certainly, I've shared with you the many, many miracles that I've seen. Seemingly, people who have literally been called dead and are alive. In fact, tomorrow evening, our Christmas Eve service, I'm going to see if we can even videocast that, if we could get that out on our regular channel of Questions in Faith. I'm turning that over to you, Susie. If you can, that would be great. Because tomorrow evening on Christmas Eve, we have a service here in Glendale, and the child who will be playing the part of Jesus is a miracle baby. His name is Huygen. In fact, the parents named his middle name Harashk, which means miracle. This is the story I shared with you a couple months ago, when the mother went into a coma and they had to take, through C-section, the child from the mother. The child was taken to one hospital. The mother was in another hospital in a coma. I arrive at the hospital and they want a prayer over the mother, and there's the father of the baby. And now what do you do to this man? Do you say, congratulations? I mean, you've just had a baby, you're a father now. I mean, when the baby's over there in intensive care, how do you congratulate someone like that? I mean, what I'm sharing with you is not, of course, the congratulations, but the different dimensions, the different spiritual, emotional dimensions of an event like this. It's cataclysmic. You've got a human life on the edge. You've got a new human life which is born into another edge situation, okay? And this went on for a good 9 days when the family told me that, you know, apparently it didn't look too good, and the hospital was anxious to kind of resolve this situation. And I'll never forget going to the hospital that ninth day, and she was still in a coma, still the baby was separated from the mother, and by miles, by literally being in another hospital, in Children's Hospital here in Los Angeles. And I remember praying over the mother and being so certain of that prayer, looking at her, and this angel came that night. She happened to be in the room as well, and this angel turned to me. She was one of the friends of this woman, and she said, you know, God wouldn't joke with something like this. God would have ended the life. And if it was meant to be ended. But this woman is needed by her family, certainly by this child. And it wasn't what she said that impressed me as much as her faith. It was the faith that Christ talks about. The faith that is without a doubt and completely believing. It's one thing to have faith, it's different to have belief, to believe in something. We all have faith. But do you believe it? You have faith in God, but do you believe in God? And so I prayed over this young mother in a coma situation, being supported by machines, watching her chest go up and down because of some breathing tubes. And the next morning, I remember leaving that hospital with mixed feelings, mixed emotions, but very certain that this was a different prayer. That I looked at her, I placed my hand on her, and I spoke with her, despite her being in a coma, despite them telling me she doesn't hear. I told her, you need to get out of this, and she needs to rise. And the following morning, I was tempted to call the family, but I didn't. I shared this with you, I believe. I didn't call the family because I could not bear to show doubt. My inquiry would have implied some doubt. So I backed off and I waited. In fact, I waited 2 days impatiently, constantly in prayer. And finally, it was 2 days later, they called me and they said that she's come out of the coma. They called me and said, against all odds, nobody expected her to come out. Except, of course, that angel that was in the room. Of course, I believed it. And I had to believe it. I was so certain that night. And it was not because of anything of myself. I got to tell you this. It had nothing to do with who I am or the person that I am. It was completely from the outside. I found a strength that day in that hospital room. And it changed. It changed her life. It changed the people around her. And it changed my life. In fact, to the point that tomorrow she will dress up as Mother Mary and bring the small child to the church where we will be singing Christmas carols. And this is the miracle of God happening right now. But that miracle requires us to believe. To believe that God is working in our lives right now. This story that I told you, it required our belief, not faith. But you need to believe in it. And that's why you can go and read a magazine, you can read an Armenian newspaper, you could sit in a hospital dominated by Armenian people who claim to be the first Christian nation on earth and not hear a word of Christianity, not hear a word of spirituality, not even invoke the name of the church or the church leadership. Because the church leadership doesn't believe in what it's doing. You see, if it did, they would be standing out there and saying, here is the cure. Here is the healing. Here is the miracle of miracles out there. Instead, we applaud all of the things that don't even make sense, don't even fit into the mission of what the church is. In other words, Christ's body. And we will definitely applaud. I've even been to that hospital where church leadership, the head of the Armenian church, has come. And I acted that day in a different capacity by being next to him and sharing with him with the primate and everything. They gave a beautiful plaque to the hospital. And everybody applauded the work of the hospital. But why aren't we believing that the church is capable of being part of that equation? Several years ago when I was serving up in San Jose, there was a group called the Armenian Professional Society, and they did a jobs fair in San Francisco. Oh, I was excited. They were going to be teaching young Armenians about the different professions. And you go there and you look at the different professions. And there was a booth set up by the Armenian Lawyers Association, Bar Association, talking about the different law programs. There was the Armenian architects that were standing there talking about architecture, about engineering. The medical profession was represented by pharmacists, by physicians, by dentists. And they were talking about how you can get involved. It was the jobs fair. Do you think that there was a table? Do you think that there was a small little booth for the Armenian church? Why isn't the Armenian church a profession? Why isn't that something that people can aspire to be a part of? Because we don't believe in it ourselves. So when I talk about pushing it to the limits, about pushing our faith, it requires us to believe in what is being said. You're saying, well, this is real heavy duty, but this is Christmas. Where are you going to talk about Christmas? When are you going to talk about the Christmas message? It's right there. It's right in front of us. Because we need, if we believe in what the message is, then Christmas starts making sense. Do you think it makes sense that today we herald the birth of Christ? Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king. Or we say, joy to the world, the Lord has come. Away in a manger, we sing these beautiful carols and we talk about stars in the sky flashing. We talk about the shepherds, the wise men, and a chorus of angels singing peace on earth, goodwill to men. We sprinkle that message on all of our Christmas cards. In fact, we have wrapping that says peace on earth, goodwill to men, Jesus Christ is King. And yet, what are we doing today? Right now, as we're speaking and as you're listening, you know that there are bombs killing innocent people, whether it's in Afghanistan, whether it's in Iraq. Right now in Darfur, children are dying because of genocide. In the year 2006, I went to Rwanda. I'm sitting in the Museum of Genocide, looking at pictures of Rwandan refugees and crying my eyes out, because as I look at those children, the children of genocide in deepest, darkest Africa, away from the rest of the world, I'm looking at these children and I'm thinking of another deep, dark area, 1915, Armenia, and my grandparents, forgotten by the world, deepest, darkest Armenia, a world turning its back on genocide as Turkey systematically annihilated 1.5 million Armenians. And I'm crying my eyes out because I'm looking at these Rwandan refugees, these pictures, and thinking of my grandparents. And there the curator of the museum comes up to me, and she says, "What's wrong? Is there anything that I can help you with?" I'm saying, "I'm sorry, I'm emotionally moved by looking at these pictures because it reminds me of my grandparents." And she says, "Oh, why so? I said, "You see, I am the grandchild of genocide survivors." And she hit me with a question that has haunted me ever since. She said, "Which genocide?" We are a people that have put people on the moon. Our space exploration is incredible. We have found cures for all kinds of diseases. We have pulled out 33 men from the center of Earth. We have the capacity to have technology that could tie us together as one small planet, talking on cell phones. And we're still at that point where we're going to ask, which genocide? You mean we cannot resolve our conflicts except through war, except by hitting each other, killing one another? And then on top of it, we're going to stand up and say, "Merry Christmas, this is Jesus' birth"? It's absurd. Who would take Jesus seriously? Who would take his followers seriously, given those circumstances? No wonder many times people think that Christians are kooks, because they're sitting out there talking about things that have no bearing to the reality of real life. There is hunger in the world. There is famine. There is disease. There is genocide. There is war. And as a Christian, your first and foremost responsibility is to walk in the shoes of Christ. And what would Jesus do? What would he do in the face of genocide but to reach out his hands? What would he do in the case of war but to say, "Let there be peace," to become the voice of saying, "No more, these are all my children. North Korean, South Korean, you're all my children." Darfuri, Armenian, Turk, French, English, it doesn't matter. You're all part of the same equation. For this reason, I created you. And for this reason, you need to be able to find that peace on earth. You see, it begins with us believing in the message of Christ. The Christmas message has to be a real message in our lives. It's not about a manger. It's not about shepherds. It's not about lights in the sky, about stars and wise men. We get so hung up. Were there three? Was there one? What were the gifts that they bring? How many times people come up to me, "Father, what were the three gifts that they bring? We know what gold is. We know what frankincense is. But what is myrrh? Would you explain that?" Or how many times people come up to me, "Would you please explain why we don't celebrate Christmas on December 25th and on January 6th? You know what, folks? It doesn't matter what the wise men brought. It doesn't matter which day you celebrate. What does matter is how you celebrate. Do you make Jesus alive in your life today? Do you make him the reason to seek peace above all else? Do you make him the reason to extend yourself, to say that this world needs my help, and with Christ with me, I can do anything? I am the ambassador of Christ, bringing love, bringing harmony where it doesn't exist. And so Darfur, watch out, because Christ is there. Christ is in our midst. And if Christ is there, Darfur cannot happen. Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Iran, Korea, watch out. It can't happen because I am a Christian. I am empowered by Christ to seek peace. I will not pick up the gun. I will beat every evil with every evil, with every power of goodness that Christ gives me to combat with. Right here in the United States, hunger on our streets. Our In His Shoes mission every month goes out to Skid Row in Los Angeles, and we feed the homeless. Last year alone, we fed over 3,000 people. This is a group of Armenian immigrants. This is a group of children of Armenian genocide survivors. This is a group of children of those that they used to call the starving Armenians, who felt the pain. And now they're out there on the streets and saying, it's not enough that we felt it. We need to feel the pain of others. And they're feeding other people on the streets, walking in their shoes, becoming the hands, becoming the feet, becoming the mouth, becoming the power, the muscle of Jesus Christ on the street. It's all around us. And so this Christmas, as we wake up and we look around us, we're saying, no, war cannot exist, but in our areas, that poverty cannot exist, that hatred cannot exist, because we are children of the living Christ. That's what Christmas is about. Making Christ's presence alive every single day of our lives. Becoming the ambassadors, becoming the feet, becoming the hands. And once we take it seriously, once we believe in the message, once we say that this message is above all others, a message of God, then you'll see that will be on the newspaper and people will say, well, then let's tap into God for healing. That we will be at the job fair and people saying, hey, that's a profession that we want to apply for. Once we believe it, there will be peace on earth. Headlines somewhere in your memory. Everyone is from somewhere, even if you've never been there. So take a minute to remember the part of you. Might be the old man calling me. And the angel said to them, be not afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of a great joy, which will come to all the people. For to you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. And this will be the sign for you. You will find a babe wrapped in swaddling cloths and laying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among men with whom He is pleased. How many wars you fighting out there this Christmas morning? Maybe there's always time for another Christmas song. Old man, he's asleep now. Got a pine moons to keep now, dreaming of his sons and daughters, proving that the blood is strong. Well, what did you expect? You knew it would be a different kind of Christmas message, didn't you? Well, that's what you come to expect. The next step is always a new step for all of us, for you and us as well. I want to thank you for this privilege to be able to share some time with you, and thank you for joining us. On behalf of this wonderful crew that I have over here, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, and for Ani with her bubbles, I want to take this opportunity to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas. May it be filled with Christ's blessings, the Christ child in all of your lives. May it radiate the light of God. which only comes from above. Merry Christmas to all. Now let's get ready for Santa Claus. Gotta get some cookies and some carrots for his reindeers.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other offer.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.